Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer and this is The Norman Invasion, Part 23, The Conquered Lands. In the last three previous shows, we have looked at the invasion in Munster, Connacht and Ulster in the 1190s and early 1200s, respectively. Now we are turning to life in the conquered lands. We will look at what the Normans did with the territories they conquered, how they changed life, and what it was like to live through these times. The changes were profound. Indeed, within 50 years of Strongbow's arrival in 1170, the landscape, its people, and settlements were almost unrecognisable. To give you some sort of an insight into this process, I'm going to focus exclusively on one area. That's the Kingdom of Ossory, which, by around the year 1200, had become the Norman County of Kilkenny. To begin then, we need to look at Kilkenny, or as it was, Ossory, on the eve of the Norman invasion, and what happened during the early stages after the Normans arrived. Modern County Kilkenny in the southeast of Ireland did not exist prior to the arrival of the Normans. However, it roughly corresponded to a Gaelic-Irish kingdom called Ossory. Ossory was slightly larger than Kilkenny, stretching north into modern-day Leash, encompassing the barony of Athabasca. This territory covered around 600,000 acres of land. Now, in the hyper-competitive world of Gaelic Ireland, prior to the Norman conquest, Ossory occupied a precarious position. To the east lay the Kingdom of Leinster, which began to grow in power in the later 11th century, while to the west lay the Munster kingdoms of Thomond and Desmond. Sandwiched between these major players, Ossory had little by way of natural defences. While the River Barrow, which snakes south along its eastern borders, did give the region some protection from Leinster, there was little to stop the kings of Munster sweeping in. Their one advantage lay in the fact that the kingdom, judging on contemporary accounts, was heavily forested. Despite their lack of natural defences, Ossory nevertheless emerged as an unlikely power in Ireland by the 10th century, as many smaller kingdoms were subsumed by the emerging major forces of Thomond, Desmond, Leinster, Meath and Connacht. Ossory more or less held their own and remained autonomous. Nevertheless, this autonomy came at a price. Both the kings of Leinster and Munster both saw the region as theirs, leading to widespread and frequent conflict. This was also the era when Viking raids swept across Ireland. However, there's little evidence that they had any lasting impact on daily life in Ossory. Sure enough, there were raids up the Nore River, the main waterway through the kingdom, but the Norse did not seize any major territories. However, by the late 10th century, they had established a town at Waterford on the southern frontier of Ossory. This was the biggest urban centre in the region. Indeed, within Ossory itself, like most Gaelic kingdoms of the time, there were few settlements of note. Kilkenny, in the centre of Ossory, was a small town built around a monastery founded by St. Kieran way back in the 6th century. The monastery occupied a rocky escarpment that overlooked the Nore River. Small as it was by the 11th century, it was emerging as a key location in Ireland. Around 1100, the Fitzpatrick kings of Ossory had made it their seat of power. Nevertheless, Kilkenny had a tiny population by modern standards, with no more than a few hundred people living there. The other notable settlement in the Kingdom of Ossory was Ahabo in the far north, which had also grown up around a monastery. It was in Ahabo and not Kilkenny where the bishops of Ossory had their residence on the eve of the Norman invasion. Now, outside these two small towns, most people in Ossory lived in relatively isolated farmsteads. Indeed, some were still living in the thousands of ring forts that pockmark the landscape today, although these were being abandoned around this time. After the year 1100, the people of Ossory faced an increasing menace to their east in the form of the ever-powerful Kingdom of Leinster. There, the MacMurrough family, based on the east bank of the River Barrow, emerged as a major player. In 1132, the expansionist and aggressive Diarmaid MacMurrough assumed the kingship of Leinster, and decades of warfare between Ossory and their neighbour broke out. By the 1160s, the MacMurroughs had risen to great heights, being the principal ally of the High King, Murkertach MacLochlin. However, in 1166, MacLochlin was murdered, and MacMurrough's fall was spectacular as he was deposed from power within weeks. This was great news for the Fitzpatrick kings of Ossory, who could now exact vengeance on their old rival. Indeed, when MacMurrough was deposed and forced into exile by an alliance led by the new High King, Rory O'Connor, the Fitzpatricks received a huge chunk of territory from the Kingdom of Leinster, which was broken up. However, in the following year of 1167, Diarmaid MacMurrough returned from exile. He had pledged to reward Norman mercenaries with land, and he was accompanied by an advance guard led by Robert Fitzgodibert. Ireland was changing, although none could have foreseen just how much. MacMurrough's enemies across Ireland were quick to attack him after his return, and indeed the first Norman blood in Ireland was spilled in two minor skirmishes around Kells in Ossory. Vastly outnumbered, MacMurrough and his Normans were quickly defeated. Fitzgodibert, realising that winning land in Ireland wouldn't be easy, quickly left and returned home to Wales. Therefore, Ossory's first interaction with the Normans had been positive. Building on this, the King of Ossory, Donacha Fitzpatrick, now continued to exact revenge from the MacMurroughs when he blinded Diarmaid MacMurrough's son Aoná in 1168. This was a very unwise move. In 1169, a much more substantial force of Normans arrived under the leadership of Robert Fitzstephen to support MacMurrough. And they were a game changer. Ossory now became a crucial battleground in the early stages of what would develop into the Norman invasion. MacMurrough was eager for revenge on the people who had blinded his son, and he was quick to turn his Norman mercenaries against the Fitzpatricks. MacMurrough, an astute and clever man, though, would not be drawn into the deep forests of Ossory that would render the Norman military advantage, their heavy cavalry, useless. Instead, the Normans advanced, and when confronted, they feigned a retreat, drawing the Fitzpatrick forces into open country. There, in what was a stark warning for the future, the Normans rode down the Ossory men. However, the Fitzpatricks would not submit easily, and another attempt by MacMurrough to penetrate Ossory later that year also failed. But no one could deny, these Normans, clad in their chainmail, were not your average mercenary. This was proven beyond any doubt in the year 1170. In August, that man who would lead the Norman invasion of Ireland, Strongbow, landed just south of Ossory at the town of Waterford with an army of over 1,200 men. In an awesome yet terrifying display of power, 2 days later, he stormed the walls of Waterford and violently took the city by siege. A few weeks later, he set out to take Dublin, the most important town in Ireland. While he almost certainly passed through southern Ossory, the Fitzpatricks were not foolish enough to offer him resistance. When scouts would have reported back this military power moving north, numbering well over 1,000 men, surely some people began to realise uncertain times lay ahead, but none could have foreseen just what was on the cards. Ossory, like most of the East, was on the verge of a biblical annihilation and transformation. Not long after the arrival of Strongbow in August 1170, events in Ireland began to move rapidly. In May 1171, Diarmaid MacMurrough, the man who had invited the Normans to Ireland, died of natural causes. Strongbow, the Norman leader, having married MacMurrough's daughter Aoife, replaced him, not as King of Leinster, but instead as Norman Lord of Leinster. The Normans now had a foothold on the doorstep of Ossory. This was only the beginning. In October 1171, the largest army ever assembled in Ireland to that date landed in Waterford, led by the Norman king himself, Henry II. Opposing this would have been suicidal, and Donogh Fitzpatrick, the King of Ossory, was probably among the first group of kings to submit to Henry when he landed at Waterford. However, this didn't appease the Norman king, and before he left Ireland, some months later, he reaffirmed Strongbow's position as Lord of Leinster, with one key difference. Norman Leinster now incorporated the Kingdom of Ossory. Strongbow could do as he liked, and the Normans did not see the Fitzpatricks as being part of their long-term plan. Indeed, the Normans and Strongbow had grand plans for their territories in Ireland. They would not rule over them like the Gaelic kings of old had. Instead, they planned to transform all lands they conquered and reshape them like the societies they had left in England, Wales and Normandy. This would be a painful process for many. Firstly, Strongbow began to take measures to secure Ossory. This saw him make the initial grants of land in the kingdom to Normans, who in turn would be expected to subdue Ossory and its people. No consideration was given for the Gaelic Irish who had lived there for centuries. These early grants saw the barony of Iveach, the southern tip of Ossory, granted to Milo FitzDavid. This was very important for the Normans as it secured the territories to the north of Waterford, a very important port. His next move was to secure the far north of Ossory, at Ahabo, where the bishop of the region lived. These lands in the shadow of the foothills of the Slievebloom Mountains were granted to Adam de Hereford. This was followed up by another grant in the early 1170s, which saw Knocktopher given to Griffin Fitzwilliam. Now he was a brother of Strongbow's son-in-law, Raymond Le Gros, who you may remember from the early parts of the series. It's almost certain that at this stage, these men were only acting as military overlords, given the region was a lawless frontier between the Normans in Leinster and the powerful Gaelic kingdoms in Munster. The Normans were also massively outnumbered at this point, so it's hard to conceive how they could have tried to actually change the economy and introduce Norman farming methods. These early grants left a huge tract of land also in the middle of Ossory that was still in the hands of the Fitzpatricks. This underlined a major problem for the Normans. They had arrived in Ireland in 1170 and within a few years had captured more territory than they knew what to do with. Strongbow, for example, had taken what amounted to be millions of acres of land in Leinster and Ossory, and ruling this was difficult to say the least. It was clear that this conquest would take decades. Therefore, much of Ossory, even though theoretically in Norman hands, was devoid of any Norman presence. Nevertheless, the Norman conquerors were quick to spot the importance of the settlement of Kilkenny itself. Not only was it one of the few settlements in Ossory, but it strategically overlooked two crossing points on the River Nore. By 1173, Strongbow planned to dominate this settlement with a castle. However, the Christian monastery of St. Canice's stood on the ideal site for a fortification. The rocky outcrop on which the monastery was located dominated the landscape for miles around. Had it been anything other than a monastery, the Normans could have built over it, but committing an act of sacrilege like this was out of the question. Instead, they chose a site a kilometre to the south where they erected the first Norman castle at Kilkenny, on high ground overlooking the river in 1173. This early Norman castle, given the speed at which it was built, was almost certainly a Mott and Bailey structure of earth and timber. However, it was now very isolated, more or less half a day's ride from any other Norman settlement. For the garrison, life at Kilkenny was dangerous. Every sound in the surrounding forests surely put them on edge. Indeed, this castle didn't last very long. In 1174, the Fitzpatricks destroyed it. This attack was significant, however, in ways that few at the time could have foreseen, as it was one of the last major acts of resistance as the Normans were increasingly strengthening their grip over Ossory with each passing year. That said, in 1176, the entire development and plans for Ossory ground to a sudden halt. In this new Norman Ireland, all power was invested in the person of the lord of a given region, and in 1176, all the grand plans to develop Leinster and Ossory stopped when Strongbow died in Dublin. His heir was his son Gilbert, who was too young to succeed his father, and the entire lordship was placed in the king's hand. This saw royal officials take responsibility for the development of Leinster, and importantly for our story, Ossory. Notorious for their poor management, these royal officials appear to have done little. That said, there were a few notable fortifications built just to secure the land. In 1186, as we saw in previous shows, Hugh de Lacy, the Lord of Meath, was assassinated at a castle being built at Freshford in the north-west of the region, while another castle was built at the Abbey of Ahaboe. While land grants were few in these years, there were some notable exceptions. In 1177, King Henry II gave territory surrounding Kells in Ossory to Roger Lapuire. His descendants would become one of the most important landowners in the region in the following centuries. Indeed, the name Lapuire is still prominent in Kilkenny today in the name Power. Some years later, in 1185, Prince John arrived in Ireland, having been appointed Lord of the Island by his father Henry II. While the visit, as we saw in part 18 of the series, was an unmitigated disaster with the prince leaving the island within a few months, this wasn't, though, before he had made one of the most significant grants in the history of Kilkenny. He gave most of the barony of Oscullen, around modern-day Gorn, in eastern Ossory, to one of his close associates, Theobald Walter. Theobald was the patriarch of the Butler family, who in 1328 gained the title Earl of Ormond and in 1391 became lords of much of Kilkenny. Indeed, this family, the Butlers, resided in Kilkenny Castle, remarkably, until 1935. However, it was the 1190s that proved to be the most decisive in terms of the development of Norman Ossory and indeed wider Kilkenny. Not long after his father's death, Strongbow's son and heir Gilbert also died, leaving Strongbow's daughter, Isabel, as the sole heir. In 1189, she married William Marshall, an increasingly influential knight at the royal court, and within 3 years, they were given control of Isabel's family lands in Ireland. This had a profound impact, not only in Ossory, but also Leinster, as they took quite a hands-on approach. One of their first acts was to break what had been the kingdoms of Leinster and Ossory into more manageable blocks of land. It did, after all, encompass several million acres of land. This saw the creation of four administrative units. Leinster was broken into Wexford, Carlow and Kildare, all of which survive as modern counties. Ossory became the county of Kilkenny. This was a clear breach with the Gaelic past, as the name Ossory now was consigned to history. In the following decade, the complete transformation of Kilkenny and indeed the wider lordship of Leinster began to take place, reflective of a process which would take hold over much of Ireland in the decades before 1270. Firstly, all political opposition was eliminated, and around this time, the Fitzpatricks were driven from their lands in central Ossory up into Upper Ossory. This cleared the way for a wholesale Norman takeover of Kilkenny. While William Marshall and his wife Isabel, the daughter of Strongbow, did not come to Ireland, they did carefully manage their estates. This saw dozens of Norman families given territory. Among these were some significant arrivals. In North Kilkenny, the Duval, Frayne and Purcell families took control of the region. Meanwhile, in South Kilkenny, the Grace and St. Aubin or Tobin families were granted lands. These, however, were relatively minor players compared with the two major landowners. These being William Marshall himself and the Bishop of Ossory. Marshall retained around 1/6 of County Kilkenny, totalling 100,000 acres of land for himself. These were territories his family would directly rule as landlord. The other major landowner was the Bishop of Ossory, who held 47,000 acres of land. One other significant landowner deserving a mention in this new Norman society was the numerous religious orders who had abbeys and priories across the county. The Augustinian, Cistercian, Knights Templar and Carmelites, amongst others, had several religious houses which were accompanied by significant tracts of land. These grants of land, however, were only the beginning. Through the following years, until his death in 1219, William Marshall transformed what had been the Kingdom of Ossory into a society modelled on Norman England. The change was phenomenal and gained pace when Marshall himself arrived in Ireland in 1200. But before I go into this, I want to take a quick break.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The visit of William and Isabel Marshall to Ireland in 1200 saw the most important town in terms of medieval Kilkenny and arguably in terms of medieval Ireland develop. This was not actually in Kilkenny, but instead just outside the county. On a greenfield site on the east bank of the River Barrow, Marshall planned a new town, a mile from Ross. This settlement, called New Ross, would become the greatest Norman success in Ireland, and by the late 13th century would be one of the busiest ports in Ireland or Britain. Nearly all goods exported from medieval Kilkenny would pass through New Ross. In a second visit to Ireland in 1207, Marshall took a crucial step to further develop the town of Kilkenny as a central defensive point and major settlement in the county. While the work of developing the town was already underway in 1207, Marshall granted a charter giving substantial rights for merchants to trade there. This included wide-ranging powers to govern their own affairs and obviously helped attract merchants and business to the town. Around this time, work also began on a new massive fortification that would become the centre of the region, Kilkenny Castle. This four-sided castle with drum towers on each corner dominated the landscape. Today, it has a strange three-sided appearance, given one side was blown off in a siege in the 17th century. A kilometre to the north, the monastery, which had been the focal point of life since the 6th century, was also transformed. There, a massive cathedral, which would become the second largest in Ireland, was constructed. For someone who could remember Ossory prior to 1170, these changes must have been phenomenal. Nothing like this cathedral or the castle had existed. Through these works, the settlement of Kilkenny was one of the major successes in Marshall's lordship of Leinster. Indeed, as early as 1202, the town had already spread across the River Nore to the east bank, where the Augustinian order established the Priory of St. John's, around which a suburb developed. It was there Kilkenny's first hospital was built to treat the town's lepers a few decades later. Kilkenny's success could also be seen in the numerous other religious orders attracted to the town. In 1231, work began on St. Francis's Priory, the Franciscan Foundation. A few years earlier, the Dominican Black Abbey was begun to the west of this site. Both Franciscans and Dominicans were dependent on the town's population for alms, so this indicated the wealth the town's merchants were generating. While the remnants of the walls are one of the most iconic reminders of Kilkenny's medieval past, William Marshall made no attempt to build such defences in the early 13th century. Perhaps Earthen Banks defended Kilkenny. Other few towns in Leinster appear to have had any major defences at this point, indicating that by 1200 all major Gaelic opposition had been eliminated. Now, while Norman Kilkenny may have been the most impressive settlement, the vast majority of the population lived in rural hamlets spread across the county, where the impact of the Norman conquest was no less dramatic. Norman farming practices were dramatically different to those among the Gaelic Irish, who had relied heavily on large cattle herds. The Normans desired to intensively farm their new colonies with crops, and the landscape was dramatically altered to suit this purpose. The county of Kilkenny was divided into manors, the medieval equivalent of farms, but these were enormous, often stretching over thousands of acres. Judging on contemporary accounts, the Gaelic kingdom of Ossory had been heavily forested prior to the conquest. Therefore, one of the first tasks the Normans carried out was to scour this landscape of trees. Then farming could begin. This was implemented by a structure of chieftenants, subtenants and labourers. To explain the often complex structure of rural life in Norman Ireland, it's worth looking at one place in particular, that is the manor or farm of Daines Fort. Today, Daines Fort is a rural region just south of Kilkenny City, but in the late Middle Ages there was a sizeable settlement in the area, now gone, while the manor or farm encompassed thousands of acres of land surrounding this settlement. After the Norman conquest, the Lords of Leinster kept Daines Fort for themselves, and it was their officials that farmed about 700 acres of the land directly. From accounts produced in 1307, we know that two-thirds of this was sown with wheat and oats, while a final third was left fallow. This was standard farming techniques of the time, to allow one-third of the land lie fallow, and this allowed the land to recover. Indeed, this recovery period, by allowing it to lie fallow, was very important, because at Daines Fort in 1307, 250 acres had already been overworked and now lay barren and useless. The rest of the land on the manor was rented out to several other sub-tenants of varying types. The most wealthy were known as farmers, who rented substantial tracts of land of well over 100 acres. Beneath them were free tenants. They rented lands of varying size, so at Daines Fort in 1307, the smallest free tenant, William de Grange, rented 8 acres, the largest, being a collective of townspeople from Daines Fort, rented about 500 acres of land. These were called free tenants because they did not owe labour service to the Lord. They were, in essence, free. The lowest people on the rung at Daines Fort were cottiers. Now, as their name suggests, they just rented cottages. These would vary in size, and sometimes they might have small parcels of land attached. The cottiers usually paid their rent partly in money and partly in labour or work, meaning that each year they had to work on the lands owned by their lord, in this case William Marshall. In some areas there was an even lower position than cottier. While there were none at Daines Fort, in the nearby manor of Callan, about 250 acres of land was held by what were called bethas. Now, bethas were Gaelic serfs who held land in common, often living in extended family groups. Now, they appear to have come with the land at the time of conquest, having occupied an almost identical status prior to the invasion. While towns and buildings totally altered the landscape, this process of transformation inevitably meant there was going to be winners and losers. And next, I'm going to look at the fortunes of those who lived through this massive change. The impact of the Norman invasion on the people who lived in Ireland through these years of change was very much mixed. There were clear winners and clear losers, and then a lot of people who lay somewhere in between. Clearly, those who gained most were the Norman lords. Take Strongbow, for example, whose life had reached a political dead end in Wales before the invasion. He now became the lord of millions of acres of prime land in Ireland. His noble supporters, who came with him, also did pretty well, receiving substantial tracts of land and the promise of future conquests in Ireland. Another great beneficiary of the invasion were the large numbers of Norman settlers, many of whom were relatively poor, who followed Strongbow to Ireland. They left lands in England and Wales, moving their lives wholesale to Ireland. Indeed, a simple look at surnames in Kilkenny, such as Welsh or Walsh, or the place name Welsh Mountain, would indicate they settled in large numbers in the area. This name, Welsh or Walsh, in particular, points to their place of origin, Wales. In Ireland, they continued their lives as labourers, tied to lords, renting land which was paid for in labour, but things did improve for them. While leaving England and Wales was risky, working conditions in Ireland were better. In England, they often had to perform up to 100 labour days each year for their land, whereas in Ireland this was often 10 or less, leaving them far more free time. Now clearly there was also great losers. For example, the Fitzpatrick family, the one-time kings of Ossory, were forced into the poor uplands of Upper Ossory, losing their ancestral home. The fate of the serfs and bethas of Gaelic society is more complex still. While they suffered undoubtedly in the turmoil of the invasion, that's without doubt, it's not clear how much their lives changed once the Norman colony bedded in. The Normans allowed them to continue living in their extended family groups and made little attempt to change their way of life. While they had no legal rights to speak of, they had had none prior to the invasion anyway. I suppose one could say that their life was unchanging, in that it remained difficult at the bottom of medieval society. While this podcast has presented a view of medieval society in Kilkenny after the invasion, much of Leinster and Meath endured a similar process. While the specifics would vary from place to place, influenced by local factors and the particular ruling families, the Normans eviscerated the society that had existed prior to their arrival in 1170. This was perhaps one of the most profound single changes ever to take place in Irish history. Life would never be the same again. As I mentioned earlier, over the next 5 to 6 weeks, I am taking a break from the Norman invasion series. Instead, I'm going to focus on a 3 or 4 part series on a fascinating story that few of you would have ever heard. This is the story of Castlecomer, a town I grew up in, which was one of the few coal mining towns in Ireland. This town was the scene of a continuous struggle over generations as coal miners battled against a mining company to improve the dangerous, horrific conditions they worked in. It is at times an unbelievable tale of assassinations, kidnapping and demonstrations, intertwined with some of the most famous chapters in Irish history, from the 1798 rebellion to the famine to the War of Independence. The first part of this history will be out in 2 weeks. So until then, slán.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.